I wondered if Arnie was dumb enough to think that the Will Darnells of this world ever did favors out of the goodness of their hearts. I hoped he wasn't, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure much about Arnie anymore. He had changed a lot in the last few weeks. We surprised the hell out of ourselves and won the game. As it turned out, that was one of only two we won that whole season. Not that I was with the team when the season ended. We had no right to win. We went out on the field feeling like losers, and we lost the toss. The Hillmen, dumb name for a team, but what's so bright about being known as the Terriers, when you get right down to it, went 40 yards on their first two plays, going through our defensive line like cheese through a goose. Then, on the third play, their third first and 10 in a row, their quarterback coughed up the ball. Gary Tardiff grabbed it up and rambled 60 yards for the score, a great big grin on his face. The Hillmen and their coach went bananas, protesting that the ball had been dead at the line of scrimmage, but the officials disagreed and we led 6-0. From my place on the bench, I was able to look across at the visitors' bleachers and could see that the few Libertyville fans there were going crazy. I guess they had a right to. It was the first time we'd led in a game all season. Arnie and Lee were waving Terriers' pennants. I waved at them. Lee saw me, waved back, then elbowed Arnie. He waved back, too. They looked as if they were getting pretty chummy up there, which made me grin. As for the game, we never looked back after that first fluky score. We had that mystic thing, momentum, on our side, maybe for the only time that year. I didn't break the conference touchdown record, as Arnie had predicted, but I scored 3 times, one of them on a 90-yard run back, the longest I ever made. At halftime, it was 17-0, and Coach was a new man. He saw a complete turnaround ahead of us, the greatest comeback in the history of the conference. Of course, that turned out to be a fool's dream, but he surely was excited that day, and I felt good for him, as I had for Arnie and Lee, getting to know each other so profitably and easily. The second half was not so good. Our defense resumed the mostly prone posture it had assumed in our first 3 games, but it was still never really close. We won 27-18. Coach had taken me out halfway through the fourth quarter to put in Brian McNally, who would be replacing me next year. Actually, even earlier than that, as it turned out. I showered and changed up, then came back out just as the 2-minute warning went off. The parking lot was full of cars, but empty of people. Wild cheering came from the field as the Hillmen fans urged their team to do the impossible in the last 2 minutes of play. From this distance, it all seemed as unimportant as it undoubtedly was. I walked over toward Christine. There she sat, with her rust-flecked sides and her new hood and her tail fins that seemed 1,000 miles long. A dinosaur from the dark diddy-bop days of the 50s, when all the oil millionaires were from Texas, and the Yankee dollar was kicking the shit out of the Japanese yen instead of the other way around. Back in the days when Carl Perkins was singing about pink pedal pushers, and Johnny Horton was singing about dancing all night on a honky-tonk hardwood floor, and the biggest teen idol in the country was Ed Kooky Burns. I touched Christine. I tried to caress it, as Arnie had done, to like it for Arnie's sake, as Lee had done. Surely, if anyone should be able to make himself like it, it should be me. Lee had only known Arnie a month. I'd known him my whole life. I slipped my hand along the rusty surface, and I thought of George LeBay, and Veronica and Rita LeBay. And somewhere along the line, the hand that was supposed to be caressing closed into a fist, and I suddenly slammed it down on Christine's flank as hard as I could, plenty hard enough to hurt my hand and make myself utter a defensive little laugh, and wonder what the hell I thought I was doing. The sound of rust sifting down onto the hot top in small flakes. The sound of a bass drum from the football field, like a giant's heartbeat. The sound of my own heartbeat. I tried the front door. It was locked. I licked my lips and realized I was scared. It was almost as if, this was very funny, this was hilarious, it was almost as if this car didn't like me. As if it suspected me of wanting to come between it and Arnie. And that the reason I didn't want to walk in front of it was because... I laughed again and then remembered my dream and stopped laughing. This was too much like it for comfort. It wasn't Chubby McCarthy blaring over the PA, of course, not in Hidden Hills, but the rest of it brought on a dreamy, unpleasant sense of déjà vu. The sound of the cheers, the sound of padded body contact, the wind hissing through the trees that looked like cutouts under an overcast sky. The engine would gun, the car would lurch forward, drop back, lurch forward, drop back, and then the tires would scream as it roared right at me. I shook the thought off. It was time to stop pandering to myself with all this crazy shit. It was time and overtime to get my imagination under control. This was a car, not a she, but an it. Not really Christine at all, but only a 1958 Plymouth Fury that had rolled off an assembly line in Detroit, along with about 400,000 others. It worked, at least temporarily. Just to demonstrate how little afraid of it I was, I got down on my knees and looked under it. What I saw there was even crazier than the haphazard way the car was being rebuilt on top. There were three new pleasurizer shocks, but the fourth was a dark, oil-caked ruin that looked as if it had been on there forever. The tailpipe was so new it was still silvery, but the muffler looked at least middle-aged, and the header pipe was in very bad shape. Looking at the header, thinking about exhaust fumes that could leak into the car from it, made me flash on Veronica LeBay again. Because exhaust fumes can kill. Dennis, what are you doing? I guess I was still more uneasy than I thought, because I was up from my knees like a shot with my heart beating in my throat. It was Arnie. He looked cold and angry. Because I was looking at his car? Why should that make him mad? Good question, but it had. That was obvious. I was looking over your mean machine, I said, trying to sound casual. Where's Lee? She had to go to the ladies, he said, dismissing her. His gray eyes never left my face. Dennis? You're the best friend I've got. Best friend I've ever had. You might have saved me a trip to the hospital the other day when Repperton pulled that knife, and I know it. But don't you go behind my back, Dennis. Don't you ever do that. From the playing field, there was a tremendous cheer. The Hillmen had just made the final score of the game, with less than 30 seconds to play. Arnie, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, I said. But I felt guilty. I felt guilty the way I had felt being introduced to Lee, sizing her up, wanting her a little, wanting the girl he so obviously wanted himself. But going behind his back? Was that what I had been doing? I suppose he could have seen it that way. I had known that his irrational interest, obsession, put it however you like, his irrational thing about the car was the locked room in the house of our friendship, the place I could not go without inviting all sorts of trouble. And if he hadn't caught me trying to jimmy the door, he'd at least come upon me trying to peek through a keyhole. I think you know exactly what I'm talking about, he said. And I saw with a tired sort of dismay that he was not just a little mad. He was furious. You and my father and mother are all spying on me for my own good. That's the way it is, isn't it? They sent you down to Darnell's garage to snoop around, didn't they? Hey, Arnie, wait just a... Boy, did you think I wouldn't find out? I didn't say anything then because we're friends. But I don't know, Dennis. There has to be a line, and I think I'm drawing it. Why don't you just leave my car alone and stop butting in where you don't belong? First of all, I said, it wasn't your father and your mother. Your father got me alone and asked me if I'd take a look at what you were doing with the car. I said, sure I would. I was curious myself. Your dad has always been okay to me. What was I supposed to say? You were supposed to say no. You don't get it. He's on your side. Your mother still hopes it doesn't come to anything. That was the idea I got. But Michael really hopes you get it running. He said so. Sure, that's the way he'd come on to you, he was almost sneering. Really all he's interested in is making sure I'm still hobbled. That's what they're both interested in. They don't want me to grow up because then they'd have to face getting old. That's too hard, man. Maybe you think so. Maybe coming from a halfway normal family makes you soft in the head, Dennis. They offered me a new car for high school graduation. Did you know that? All I had to do was give up Christine, make all A's, and agree to go to Horlicks, where they could keep me in direct view for another 4 years. I didn't know what to say. That was pretty crass, all right. So just butt out of it, Dennis. That's all I'm saying. We'll both be better off. I didn't tell him anything anyhow, I said. Just that you were doing a few things here and there. He seemed sort of relieved.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I didn't have any idea it was as close to street legal as it is. But it isn't all the way yet. I looked underneath and that header pipe's a mess. I hope you drive with your windows open.
Don't tell me how to drive it. I know more about what makes cars run than you ever will.
That was when I started to get pissed off at him. I didn't like it. I didn't want to have an argument with Arnie, especially not now, when Lee would be joining him in another moment. But I could feel somebody upstairs in the brain room starting to pull those red switches, one by one.
That's probably true, I said, controlling my voice.
But I'm not sure how much you know about people. Will Darnell gave you an improper sticker. If you got picked up, he could lose his state inspection certificate. He gave you a dealer plate. Why did he do those things, Arnie?
For the first time, Arnie seemed defensive.
I told you, he knows I'm doing the work. Don't be a numbskull. That guy wouldn't give a crippled crab a crutch unless there was something in it for him, and you know it.
Dennis, will you leave it alone, for God's sake?
Man, I said, stepping toward him. I don't give a fuck if you have a car. I just don't want you in a bind over it. Sincerely.
He looked at me uncertainly.
I mean, what are we yelling at each other about? Because I looked underneath your car to see how the exhaust pipe was hanging?
But that hadn't been all I was doing. Some, but not quite all. And I think we both knew it. On the playing field, the final gun went off with a flat bang. A slight drizzle had started to come down, and it was getting cold. We turned toward the sound of the gun and saw Lee coming toward us, carrying her pennant and Arnie's. She waved. We waved back.
Dennis, I can take care of myself, he said.
Okay, I said simply. I hope you can.
Suddenly I wanted to ask him how deep he was in with Darnell. And that was a question I couldn't ask. That would bring on an even more bitter argument. Things would be said that could maybe never be repaired.
I can, he repeated.
He touched his car, and the hard look in his eyes softened. I felt a mixture of relief and dismay. The relief because we weren't going to have a fight after all. We had both managed to avoid saying anything completely irreparable. But it also seemed to me that it wasn't just one room of our friendship that had been closed off. It was a whole damn wing. He had rejected what I'd had to say with complete totality and had made the conditions for continuing the friendship pretty clear. Everything will be okay, as long as you do it my way. Which was also his parents' attitude, if only he could have seen it. But then I suppose he had to learn it somewhere. Lee came up, drops of rain gleaming in her hair. Her color was high, her eyes sparkling with good health and good excitement. She exuded a naive and untested sexuality that made me feel a little lightheaded. Not that I was the main object of her attention. Arnie was.
How did it end? Arnie asked.
27-18, she said, and then added gleefully, We destroyed them. Where were you two?
Just talking cars, I said.
And Arnie shot me an amused glance. At least his sense of humor hadn't disappeared with his common sense. And I thought there was some cause for hope in the way he looked at her. He was falling for her, head over heels. The tumble was slow right now, but it would almost surely speed up if things went right. I was really curious about how it had happened, the two of them getting together. Arnie's complexion had cleared up, and he looked pretty good, but in a rather bookish, bespeckled sort of way. He wasn't the sort of guy you'd have expected Lee Cabot to want to be with. You'd expect her to be hanging from the arm of the American high school version of Apollo. People were streaming back across the field now, our players and theirs, our fans and theirs.
Just talking cars, Lee repeated, mocking softly.
She turned her face up to Arnie's and smiled. He smiled back, a sappy, dopey smile that did my heart a world of good. I could tell, just looking at him, that whenever Lee smiled at him that way,
Christine was the farthest thing from his mind. She was demoted back to her proper place as an it, a means of transportation.
I liked that just fine.
Chapter 18. On the Bleachers. I saw Arnie and Lee in the halls a lot over the first 2 weeks in October, first leaning against his locker or hers, talking before the homeroom bell, then holding hands, then going out after school with their arms around each other. It had happened. In high school parlance, they were going together. I thought it was more than that. I thought they were in love. I hadn't seen Christine since the day we beat Hidden Hills. She had apparently gone back to Darnell's for more work. Maybe that was part of the agreement Arnie had struck with Darnell when Darnell issued the dealer plate and the illegal sticker that day. I didn't see the Fury, but I saw a lot of Lee and Arnie, and heard a lot about them. They were a hot item of school gossip. Girls wanted to know what she saw in him, for heaven's sake. Boys, always more practical and prosaic, only wanted to know if my runt friend had managed to get into her pants. I didn't care about either of those things, but I did wonder from time to time what Regina and Michael thought of their son's extreme case of first love. One Monday in mid-October, Arnie and I ate our lunch together on the bleachers by the football field, as we had been planning to do on the day Buddy Repperton had pulled the knife. Repperton had indeed been expelled for that. Moochie and Don had gotten 3-day vacations. They were currently being pretty good boys. And in the not-so-sweet meanwhile, the football team had been run over twice more. Our record was now 1-5, and Coach Puffer had lapsed back into morose silence. My lunch bag wasn't as full as it had been on the day of Repperton and the knife. The only virtue I could see of being 1-5 was that we were now so far behind the Bears of Ridge Rock, they were 5-0-1, that it would be impossible for us to do anything in the conference unless their team bus went over a cliff. We sat there in the mellow October sunshine, the time for the little spooks in their bedsheets and rubber masks and Woolworth's Darth Vader costumes wasn't far off, munching and not saying too much. Arnie had a deviled egg and swapped it for one of my cold meatloaf sandwiches. Parents know very little about the secret lives of their children, I guess. Every Monday since first grade, Regina Cunningham had put a deviled egg in Arnie's lunch bag. And every day after we had a meatloaf dinner, which was usually Sunday suppers, I had a cold meatloaf sandwich in mine. Now, I have always hated cold meatloaf, and Arnie has always hated deviled eggs, although I never saw him turn one down done any other way. And I've often wondered what our mothers would think if they knew how few of the hundreds of deviled eggs and dozens of cold meatloaf sandwiches that went into our respective lunch sacks had actually been eaten by him for whom each was intended. I got down to my cookies, and Arnie got down to his fig bars. He glanced over at me to make sure I was watching, and then crammed all 6 fig bars into his mouth at once and crunched down on them, his cheeks puffed out grotesquely. "Aw, Jesus, what a gross-out!" I cried. Arnie replied. I started to poke my fingers at his sides, where he's always been extremely ticklish, screaming, "Side noogies! Look out, Arnie, I got side noogies on you!" Arnie started to laugh, spraying out little wads of munched-up fig bars. I know how obnoxious that must sound, but it was really funny. "Quit it, Dennis," Arnie said, his mouth still full of fig bars. "What was that? I can't understand you, you fucking barbarian!" I kept poking my fingers at him, giving him what we used to call side noogies when we were little kids, for some reason now lost in the sands of time, and he kept wiggling and twisting and laughing. He swallowed mightily, then belched. "You're so fucking gross, Cunningham," I said. "I know." He seemed really pleased by it. Probably was. So far as I know, he'd never pulled the 6 fig bars at once trick in front of anyone else. If he had done it in front of his parents, I figure Regina would have had a kitty, and Michael probably a brain hemorrhage. "What's the most you ever did?" I asked him.
"I did 12 once," he said. "But I thought I was going to choke."
I snorted laughter. "Have you done it for Lee yet?"
"I'm holding it back for the prom," he said. "I'll give her a few side noogies, too."
We got laughing over that, and I realized how much I missed Arnie sometimes. I had football, student council, a new girlfriend who would, I hoped, consent to give me a hand job before the drive-in season ended. I had little hope of getting her to do more than that. She was a little too enchanted with herself.
Still, it was fun trying. Even with all that going on, I had missed Arnie. First there had been Christine, now there was Lee and Christine. In that order, I hoped.
"Where is she today?"
I asked.
"Sick," he said. "She got her period, and I guess it really hurts."
I raised a set of mental eyebrows. If she was discussing her female problems with him, they were getting chummy indeed.
"How did you happen to ask her to the football game that day?"
I asked.
"The day we played Hidden Hills."
He laughed.
"The only football game I've been to since my sophomore year. We brought you luck, Dennis."
"You just called her up and asked her to go?"
"I almost didn't. That was the first date I ever had."
He glanced over at me shyly.
"I don't think I slept more than 2 hours the night before. After I called her up and she said she'd go with me, I was scared to death I'd make an asshole of myself, or that Buddy Rapperton would show up and want to fight, or something else would happen."
"You seem to have everything under control."
"Did I?"
He looked pleased.
"Well, that's good, but I was scared. She talked to me in the halls, you know, asked me about assignments and stuff like that. She joined the chess club, even though she wasn't very good. But she's getting better. I'm teaching her."
"I'll bet you are, you dog," I thought, but didn't quite dare say it. I still remembered the way he had blown up at me the same day at Hidden Hills. Besides, I wanted to hear this. I was pretty curious. Captivating a girl as stunning as Lee Cabot had been a real coup.
"So, after a while, I started to think, maybe she was interested in me," Arnie went on. "It probably took a lot longer for the penny to drop for me than it would for some other guys. Guys like you, Dennis."
"Sure, I'm a smoothie," I said. "What James Brown used to call a sex machine."
"No, you're no sex machine, but you know about girls," he said seriously. "You understand them." "I was always just scared of them. Never knew what to say. Still don't, I guess. Lee's different. I was afraid to ask her out."
He seemed to consider this.
"I mean, she's a beautiful girl. Really beautiful. Don't you think so, Dennis?"
"Yes. As far as I can tell, she's the prettiest girl in school."
He smiled, pleased. "I think so, too. But I thought maybe it's only because I love her that I think that way."
I looked at my friend, hoping he wasn't gonna get into more trouble than he could handle. At that point, of course, I had no idea what trouble meant.
"Anyway, I heard these guys talking one day in chem lab, Lenny Barong and Ned Strawman, and Ned was telling Lenny that he'd asked her out, and she'd said no, but in a nice way. Like, maybe if he asked her again, she might try it out. And I had this picture of her going steady with Ned by spring, and I started to feel really jealous. It's ridiculous. I mean, she told him no, and I'm feeling jealous. You dig what I'm saying?"
I smiled and nodded. Out on the field, the cheerleaders were trying out some new routines. I didn't think they would help our team very much, but it was pleasant to watch them. The shadows puddled at their heels on the green grass in the bright noontime.
"The other thing that got me was that Ned didn't sound pissed off or ashamed or rejected or anything like that. He tried for a date and got turned down, and that was all. I decided I could do that, too. Still, when I called her up on the phone, I was sweating all over. Man, that was bad. I kept imagining her laughing at me and saying something like, 'Me go out with you, you little creep? You must be dreaming. I'm not that hard up yet.'"
"Yeah," I said. "I can't figure out why she didn't." He poked me in the stomach.
"Gut nuggies, Dennis. Make you puke."
"Never mind," I said. "Tell me the rest." He shrugged.
"Not much else to tell. Her mother answered the phone when I called and said she'd get her. I heard the phone go clunking down on the table and almost hung up."
Arnie held up two fingers a quarter of an inch apart.
"I came this close to hanging up, no shit."
"I know the feeling," I said. "And I did. You worry about the laughter. You imagine the contempt to some degree or other. no matter if you're a football player or some pimply little four-eyed runt. But I don't think I could understand the degree to which Arnie must have felt it. What he had done had taken monumental courage. It's a small thing, a date, but in our society, there are all sorts of charged forces swirling behind that simple concept. I mean, there are kids who go all the way through high school and never get up enough courage to ask a girl for a date. Never once in all 4 years. And that isn't just one or two kids. It's lots of them. And there are lots of sad girls who never get asked. It's a shitty way to run things when you stop to think about it. A lot of people get hurt. I could dimly imagine the naked terror Arnie must have felt, waiting for Lee to come to the phone, the sense of dread amazement at the idea that he was not planning to ask just any girl out, but the prettiest girl in school. She answered, Arnie went on. She said, hello, and man, I couldn't say anything. I tried, and nothing came out but this little whistle of air. So she said, hello, who is this? Like it might be some kind of practical joke, you know, and I thought, this is ridiculous. If I can talk to her in the hall, I should be able to talk to her on the goddamn phone. All she can say is no. I mean, she can't shoot me or anything if I ask her for a date. So I said, hi, this is Arnie Cunningham. And she said, hi. And blah, 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 bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And then I realized I didn't even know where the hell I wanted to ask her to go. And we're running out of things to say. Pretty soon she's going to hang up. So I asked her the first thing I could think of. Would she want to go to the football game on Saturday? She said she'd love to go. Right off like that. Like she'd just been waiting for me to ask her, you know? Probably she was.
Yeah.
Maybe. Arnie considered this, bemused. The bell rang, signifying 5 minutes to period five. Arnie and I got up. The cheerleaders trotted off the field, their little skirts flipping saucily. We climbed down the bleachers, tossed our lunch bags in one of the trash barrels painted with the school colors, orange and black, talk about Halloween, and walked toward the school. Arnie was still smiling, recalling the way it had worked itself out that first time with Lee. Asking her in the game was sheer desperation. Thanks a lot, I said. That's what I get for playing my heart out every Saturday afternoon, huh? You know what I mean. Then, after she said she'd go with me, I remember this really horrible thought and called you, remember? Suddenly I did. He had called to ask me if that game was at home or away, and had seemed absurdly crushed when I told him it was at Hidden Hills. So there I was. I got a date with the prettiest girl in school, I'm crazy about her, and it turns out to be an away game, and my car's in Will's garage. You could have taken the bus. I know that now, but I didn't then. The bus always used to be full up a week before the game. I didn't know so many people would stop coming to the games if the team started losing. Don't remind me, I said. So I went to Will. I knew Christine could do it, but no way she was street legal. I mean, I was desperate. How desperate? I wondered, coldly and suddenly. And he came through for me. Said he understood how important it was, and if... Arnie paused, seemed to consider. And that's the story of the big date, he finished gracelessly. And if... But that wasn't my business. Be his eyes, my father had said. But I pushed that away, too. We were walking past the smoking area now, deserted except for three guys and two girls hurriedly finishing a joint. They had it in a makeshift matchbook roach clip, and the evocative odor of pot, so similar to the aroma of slowly burning autumn leaves, slipped into my nostrils. "Seen Buddy Repperton around?" I asked. "No," he said, "and don't want to. You?" I had seen him once, hanging out at Vandenberg's Happy Gas, an extra barrel service station out on Route 22 in Monroeville. Don Vandenberg's dad owned it, and the place had been on the ragged edge of going bust ever since the Arab oil embargo in 73. Buddy hadn't seen me. I was just cruising by. Not to talk to.
You mean he can talk?
Arnie said with a scorn that wasn't like him.
What a shitter.
I started. That word again. I thought about it, told myself what the fuck, and asked him where he had gotten that particular term. He looked at me, thoughtfully. The second bell rang suddenly, braying out from the side of the building. We were going to be late to class, but right then, I didn't care at all. "You remember the day I bought the car?" he said. "Not the day I put the deposit on it, but the day I actually bought it?"
"Sure."
"Well, I went in with LeBay while you stayed outside. He had this tiny kitchen with a red check tablecloth on the table. We sat down and he offered me a beer. I figured I'd better take it. I really wanted the car and I didn't want to, you know, offend him somehow. So we each had a beer and he got off on this long rambling, what would you call it, rant, I guess? This rant about how all the shitters were against him. It was his word, Dennis, the shitters. He said it was the shitters that were making him sell the car.
What did he mean?
I guess he meant that he was too old to drive, but he wouldn't put it that way. It was all their fault, the shitters. The shitters wanted him to take a driver's road test every 2 years and an eye exam every year. It was the eye exam that bothered him. And he said they didn't like him on the street. No one did. So someone threw a stone at the car. I understand all that, but I don't understand why...
Arnie paused in the doorway, oblivious of the fact that we were late for class. His hands were shoved into the back pockets of his jeans, and he was frowning.
I don't understand why he let Christine go to rack and ruin like that, Dennis. Like she was when I bought her. Mostly he talked about her like he really loved her. I know you thought it was just part of his sales pitch, but it wasn't. And then near the end, when he was counting the money, he sort of growled, "That shitting car, I'll be fucked if I know why you want it, boy. It's the ace of spades." And I said something like, I thought I could fix it up really nice, and he said, "All that and more, if the shitters will let you."
We went inside. Mr. Leroux, the French teacher, was going someplace fast, his bald head gleaming under the fluorescent lights. "You boys are late," he said in a hurried voice that reminded me of the white rabbit in Alice in Wonderland. We hurried up until he was out of sight, and then we slowed down again.
Arnie said, "When Buddy Repperton got after me like that, I was really scared."
He lowered his voice, smiling but serious.
"I almost pissed my pants, if you want to know the truth. Anyway, I guess I used LeBay's word without even thinking about it. In Repperton's case, it fits, wouldn't you say?"
"Yes."
"I gotta go," Arnie said. "Calculus, then Auto Shop 3. I think I've learned the whole course on Christine the last 2 months anyway."
He hurried off, and I just stood there in the hall for a minute, watching him go. I had a study hall with Miss Ratpack period 6 on Mondays, and I thought I could slip in the back unnoticed. I had done it before. Besides, seniors get away with murder, as I was rapidly learning. I stood there, trying to shake a feeling of fright that would never be so amorphous or unconcrete again. Something was wrong. Something was out of place, out of joint. There was a chill. And not all the bright October sunshine spilling through all the high school windows in the world would dispel it. Things were as they always had been, but they were getting ready to change. I felt it. I stood there trying to get myself in gear, trying to tell myself that the chill was no more than my fears about my own future, and that was the change coming that I was uneasy about. Maybe that was part of it. But it wasn't all. "That shitting car. I'll be fucked if I know why you want it, boy. It's the ace of spades." I saw Mr. Leroux coming back from the office, and I started moving. I think that everybody has a backhoe in his or her head. And at moments of stress or trouble, you can fire it up and simply push everything into a great big slit trench in the floor of your conscious mind. Get rid of it. Bury it. Except that that slit trench goes down into the subconscious, and sometimes, in dreams,
the bodies stir and walk. I dreamed of Christine again that night. Arnie behind the wheel this time, the decomposing corpse of Roland D. LeBay lolling obscenely in the shotgun seat as the car roared out of the garage at me, pinning me with the savage circles of its headlights. I woke up with my pillow crammed against my mouth to stifle the screams. Chapter 19. The Accident. That was the last time I talked to Arnie, really talked to him, until Thanksgiving, because the following Saturday was the day I got hurt. That was the day we played the Ridge Rock Bears again, and this time we lost by the truly spectacular score of 46-3. I wasn't around at the end of the game, however. About 7 minutes into the third quarter, I got into the open, took a pass, and was setting myself to run when I was hit simultaneously by 3 Bears defensive linemen. There was an instant of terrible pain, a bright flare, as if I had been caught on ground zero of a nuclear blast. Then there was a lot of darkness. Things stayed dark for a fairly long time, although it didn't seem long to me. I was unconscious for about 50 hours, and when I woke up late on the afternoon of Monday, the 23rd of October, I was in Libertyville Community Hospital. My dad and mom were there. So was Ellie, looking pale and strained. There were dark brown circles under her eyes, and I was absurdly touched. She had found it in her heart to cry for me, in spite of all the Twinkies and Yodels I had hooked out of the bread box after she went to bed, in spite of the time when she was 12 that I had given her a little bag of Vigoro after she had spent about a week looking at herself sideways in the mirror with her tightest T-shirt on so she could see if her boobs were getting any bigger. She had burst into tears, and my mother had been super pissed at me for almost 2 weeks. In spite of all the teasing and the shitty little I'm one up on you sibling games. Arnie wasn't there when I woke up, but he joined my family shortly. He and Lee had been down in the waiting room. That evening, my aunt and uncle from Albany showed up, and the rest of that week was a steady parade of family and friends. The entire football team showed up, including Coach Puffer, who looked as if he had aged about 20 years. I guess he had found out that there were worse things than a losing season. Coach was the one who broke the news to me that I was never going to play football again. And I don't know what he expected, for me to bust out crying or maybe have hysterics from the drawn, tense look on his face, but I didn't have much of a reaction at all, inwardly or outwardly. I was just glad to be alive and to know I would walk again. Eventually. If I had been hit just once, I probably could have bounced right up and gone back for more. But the human body was never meant to get creamed from 3 different angles at the same time. Both of my legs were broken, the left in 2 places. My right arm had whipped around behind me when I went down, and I had sustained a nasty green stick fracture of the forearm. But all of that was really only the icing on the cake. I had also gotten a fractured skull, and sustained what the doctor in charge of my case kept calling a lower spinal accident, which seemed to mean that I had come within about a centimeter of being paralyzed from the waist down for the rest of my life. I got a lot of visitors, a lot of flowers, a lot of cards. All of it was in some ways very enjoyable, like being alive to help celebrate your own wake. But I also got a lot of pain, and a lot of nights when I couldn't sleep. I got an arm suspended over my body by weights and pulleys, likewise a leg. They both seemed to itch all the time under the casts, and a temporary cast, what is called a presser cast, around my lower back. Also, of course, I got the prospect of a long hospital stay, and endless trips in a wheelchair to that chamber of horrors so innocently labeled the therapy wing. Oh, and one other thing. I got a lot of time. I read the paper, I asked questions of my visitors, and on more than a few occasions as things went on and my suspicions began to get out of hand, I asked myself if I might not be losing my mind. I was in the hospital until Christmas, and by the time I got home, my suspicions had almost taken their final shape. I was finding it more and more difficult to deny that monstrous shape, and I knew damned well I wasn't losing my mind. In some ways, it would have been better, more comforting, if I could have believed that. By then, I was badly frightened, and more than half in love with my best friend's girl as well. Time to think. Too much time. Time to call myself 100 names for what I was thinking about Lee. Time to look up at the ceiling of my room and wish I had never heard of Arnie Cunningham, or Lee Cabot, or of Christine. Part 2. Arnie. Teenage Love Songs. Chapter 20. The Second Argument. Arnie Cunningham's 1958 Plymouth became street legal on the afternoon of November 1, 1978. He finished the process, which had really begun the night he and Dennis Gilder changed that first flat tire, by paying an excise tax fee of $8.50, a municipal road tax of $2, which also enabled him to park free at the meters in the downtown area, and a license plate fee of $15. He was issued Pennsylvania plate HY-6241-J at the Motor Vehicle Bureau in Monroeville. He drove back from the MVB in a car Will Darnell had loaned him and rolled out of Darnell's do-it-yourself garage behind the wheel of Christine. He drove her home. His father and mother arrived together from Horlicks University an hour or so later. The fight started almost at once.
"Did you see it?"
Arnie asked, speaking to them both, but perhaps a little more to his father.
"I registered it just this afternoon."
He was proud. He had reason to be. Christine had just been washed and waxed, and she gleamed in the late afternoon autumn sunlight. There was still a lot of rust on her, but she looked 1,000 times better than she had on the day Arnie bought her. The rocker panels, like the hood and the back deck, were brand new. The interior was spick and span and neat as a pin. The glass and the chrome gleamed.
"Yes, I," Michael began.
"Of course we saw it," Regina snapped. She was making a drink, spinning a swizzle stick in a Waterford glass in furious counterclockwise circles. "We almost ran into it. I don't want it parked here. The place looks like a used car lot."
"Mom,"
Arnie said, stunned and hurt. He looked to Michael, but Michael had left to make a drink of his own. Perhaps he had decided he was going to need it.
"Well, it does," Regina Cunningham said. Her face was a trifle paler than usual.
The rouge on her cheeks stood out almost like clown color. She knocked back half of her gin and tonic at a swallow, grimacing the way people grimace at the taste of bad medicine.
"Take it back where you had it. I don't want it here, and I won't have it here, Arnie. That's final."
"Take it back," Arnie said, now angry as well as hurt.
"That's great, isn't it? It's costing me $20 a week there."
"It's costing you a lot more than that," Regina said. She drained her drink and set the glass down. She turned to look at him.
"I took a look at your bank book the other day."
"You did what?" Arnie's eyes widened. She flushed a little, but did not drop her eyes. Michael came back and stood in the doorway, looking unhappily from his wife to his son.
"I wanted to know how much you'd been spending on that damned car," she said. "Is that so unnatural? You have to go to college next year. So far as I know, they're not giving away free college educations in Pennsylvania."
"So you just went into my room and hunted around until you found my bank book?" Arnie said. His gray eyes were hard with anger.
"Maybe you were hunting for pot, too, or girly books, or maybe cum stains on the sheets."
Regina's mouth dropped open. She had perhaps expected hurt and anger from him, but not this utter, no-holds-barred fury.
"Arnie!"
Michael roared.
"Well, why not?"
Arnie shouted back.
"I thought that was my business. God knows you spent enough time telling me how it was my responsibility, the both of you."
Regina said, "I'm very disappointed that you feel that way, Arnold. Disappointed and hurt.
You're behaving like, don't tell me how I'm behaving. How do you think I feel? I worked my ass off getting the car street legal. Over 2.5 months I worked on it. And when I bring it home, the first thing you say is, get it out of the driveway. How am I supposed to feel happy?"
"That's no reason to take that tone to your mother," Michael said. In spite of the words, the tone was one of awkward conciliation.
Or to use that sort of language.
Regina held her glass out to her husband.
Make me another drink. There's a fresh bottle of gin in the pantry.
Dad, stay here, Arnie said. Please. Let's get this over.
Michael Cunningham looked at his wife, his son, at his wife again. He saw Flint in both places. He retreated to the kitchen, clutching his wife's glass. Regina turned grimly back to her son. The wedge had been in the door since late last summer. She had perhaps recognized this as her last chance to kick it back out again.
This July, you had almost $4,000 in the bank, she said. About three-quarters of all the money you've made since ninth grade, plus interest.
Oh, you've really been keeping track, haven't you? Arnie said.
He sat down suddenly, gazing at his mother. His tone was one of disgusted surprise.
Mom? Why didn't you just take the damn money and put it in an account under your own name?
Because, she said, until recently, you seemed to understand what the money was for. In the last couple of months, it's all been car, 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 and more recently, girl, girl, girl. It's as if you've gone insane on both subjects.
Well, thanks. I can always use a nice, unprejudiced opinion on the way I'm conducting my life.
This July, you had almost $4,000. For your education, Arnie, for your education. Now you have just over $2,800. You can go on about snooping all you want, and I admit, it hurts a little, but that's a fact. You've gone through $1,200 in 2 months. Maybe that's why I don't want to look at that car. You ought to be able to understand that. To me, it looks like, listen, like a big dollar bill flying away. Can I tell you a couple of things?
No, I don't think so, Arnie, she said with finality. I really don't think so. Michael had come back with her glass, half full of gin. He added tonic at the bar and handed it to her. Regina drank, making that bitter grimace of distaste again. Arnie sat in the chair near the TV, looking at her, thoughtfully.
You teach college, he said. You teach college? And that's your attitude? I have spoken. The rest of you can just shut up.
Great.
I pity your students.
You watch it, Arnie, she said, pointing a finger at him. Just watch it.
Can I tell you a couple of things or not?
Go ahead, but it won't make any difference.
Michael cleared his throat. Reg, I think Arnie's right. That's hardly a constructive attitude. She turned on him like a cat.
Not one word from you either!
Michael flinched back.
The first thing is this, Arnie said. If you gave my savings passbook more than a cursory look, and I'm sure you did, you must have noticed that my total savings went down to an all-time low of $2,200 the first week of September. I had to buy a whole new front-end kit for Christine.
You speak as if you're proud of it, she said angrily.
I am. He met her eyes levelly. I put that front-end kit in myself, with no help from anybody. And I did a really good job. You wouldn't...
Here his voice seemed to falter momentarily, and then firmed again.
You wouldn't be able to tell it from the original. But my point is, the total savings is back up $600 from then, because Will Darnell liked my work and took me on. If I can add $600 to my savings account every 2 months, and I might do better if he puts me on the run over to Albany where he buys his used cars, there'll be $4,600 in my account by the time school ends. And if I work there full-time next summer, I'll be starting college with nearly $7,000. And you can lay it all at the door of that car you hate so much.
That won't do you any good if you can't get into a good school, she countered, shifting her ground deftly as she had in so many department committee meetings when someone dared to question one of her opinions,
which was not often. She did not concede the point. She simply passed on to something else.
Your grades have slipped.
Not enough to matter, Arnie said.
What do you mean, not enough to matter? You got a deficient in calculus.
We got the red card just a week ago.
Red cards, sometimes known as flunk cards by the student body, were issued halfway through each marking period to students who had posted a 75 average grade or lower during the first 5 weeks of the quarter.
That was based on a single examination, Arnie said, calmly. Mr. Fenderson is famous for giving so few exams in the first half of a quarter that you can bring home a red card with an F on it because you didn't understand one basic concept, and end up with an A for the whole marking period. All of which I would have told you if you'd asked. You didn't. Also, that's only the third red card I've gotten since I started high school. My overall average is still 93, and you know how good that is. It'll go lower, she said shrilly and stepped toward him. It's this goddamn obsession with the car. You've got a girlfriend. I think that's fine, wonderful, super, but this car thing is insane. Even Dennis says... Arnie was up and up fast, so close to her that she took a step backward, surprised out of her anger, at least momentarily, by his. You leave Dennis out of this, he said in a deadly soft voice. This is between us. All right, she said, shifting ground once more. The simple fact is that your grades are going to go down. I know it, and your father knows it, and the mathematics red card is an indication of it. Arnie smiled confidently, and Regina looked wary. Good, he said. I'll tell you what. Let me keep the car here until the marking period ends. If I've got any grade lower than a C, I'll sell it to Darnell. He'll buy it. He knows he could get a grand for it in the shape it's in now. The value's not going to do anything but go up. Arnie considered. I'll go you one better. If I'm not on the semester honor roll, I'll also get rid of it. That means I'm betting my car. I'll get a B in calculus, not just for the quarter, but for the whole semester. What do you say? No, Regina said immediately. She shot a warning look at her husband. Stay out of this. Michael, who had opened his mouth, closed it with a snap. Why not? Arnie asked, with deceptive softness. Because it's a trick, and you know it's a trick, Regina shouted at him, her fury suddenly total and uncontained. And I'm not going to stand here any longer chewing this rag and listening to a lot of insolence from you. I changed your dirty diapers. I said get it out of here, drive it if you have to, but don't leave it where I have to look at it. That's it, the end. How do you feel, Dad? Arnie asked, shifting his gaze.
Michael opened his mouth again to speak.
He feels as I do,
Regina said. Arnie looked back at her. Their eyes, the same shade of gray, met.
It doesn't matter what I say, does it?
I think this has gone quite far it... She began to turn away, her mouth still hard and determined, her eyes oddly confused. Arnie caught her arm just above the elbow.
It doesn't, does it? Because when you've made up your mind about something, you don't see, you don't hear, you don't think.
Arnie, stop it, Michael shouted at him. Arnie looked at her, and Regina looked back at him. Their eyes were frozen, locked.
I'll tell you why you don't want to look at it, he said in that same soft voice. It isn't the money. Because the cars let me connect with a job that I'm good at, and it'll end up making me money. You know that. It isn't my grades either. They're no worse than they ever were. You know that, too. It's because you can't stand not to have me under your thumb. The way your department is, the way he is,
he jerked a thumb at Michael, who managed to look angry and guilty and miserable all at the same time.
The way I always was.
Now Arnie's face was flushed, his hands clenched into fists at his sides.
All that liberal bullshit about how the family decided things together, discussed things together, worked things out together. But the fact is, you were always the one who picked out my school clothes, my school shoes, who I was supposed to play with and who I couldn't. You decided where we were going on vacation. You told him when to trade cars and what to trade for. Well, this is one thing you can't run, and you fucking hate it, don't you? She slapped his face. The sound was like a pistol shot in the living room. Outside, dusk had fallen, and cars cruised by, indistinct, their headlights like yellow eyes. Christine sat in the Cunninghams' asphalted driveway as she had once sat on Roland D. LeBay's lawn, but looking considerably better now than she had then. She looked cool and above all this ugly, undignified family bickering. She had, perhaps, come up in the world. Abruptly, shockingly, Regina Cunningham began to cry. This was a phenomenon akin to rain in the desert that Arnie had seen only 4 or 5 times in his entire life, and on none of the other occasions had he been the cause of the tears. Her tears were frightening, he told Dennis later, by virtue of the simple fact that they were there. That was enough, but there was more. The tears made her look old. In a single, terrifying stroke, as if she had made a quantum leap from 45 to 60 in a space of seconds. The hard gray shine in her gaze turned blurry and weak, and suddenly the tears were spilling down her cheeks, cutting through her makeup. She fumbled on the mantelpiece for her drink, jogged the glass instead with the tips of her fingers. It fell onto the hearth and shattered. A kind of incredulous silence held among the three of them, and amazement that things had come this far. And somehow, even through the weakness of the tears, she managed to say, "I won't have it in our garage, or in this driveway, Arnold." He answered coldly, "I wouldn't have it here, Mother." He walked to the doorway, turned back, and looked at them both. "Thanks for being so understanding. Thanks a lot. Both of you." He left. Chapter 21. Arnie and Michael. Michael caught Arnie in the driveway, headed for Christine. He put a hand on Arnie's shoulder. Arnie shook it off and went on digging for his car keys. "Arnie, please." Arnie turned around, fast. For a moment, he seemed on the verge of making that evening's blackness total by striking his father. Then some of the tenseness in his body subsided, and he leaned back against the car, touching it with his left hand, stroking it, seeming to draw strength from it. "All right," he said. "What do you want?" Michael opened his mouth and then seemed unsure how to proceed. An expression of helplessness. It would have been funny if it hadn't been so grimly awful, spread over his face. He seemed to have aged, to have gone gray and haggard around the edges. "Arnie," he said, seeming to force the words out against some great weight of opposing inertia. "Arnie, I'm so sorry." "Yeah," Arnie said, and turned away again, opening the driver's side door. A pleasant smell of well-cared-for car drifted out. "I could see that from the way you stood up for me." "Please," he said. "This is hard for me, harder than you know." Something in his voice made Arnie turn back. His father's eyes were desperate and unhappy. "I didn't say I wanted to stand up for you," Michael said. "I see her side as well, you know. I see the way you pushed her, determined to have your own way at any cost." Arnie uttered a harsh laugh. "Just like her, in other words." "Your mother is going through the change of life," Michael said quietly. "It's been extremely difficult for her." Arnie blinked at him, at first not even sure what he had heard. It was as if his father had suddenly said something to him in Igpayatinle. It seemed to have no more relevance to what they were talking about than baseball scores.
What?
The change.
She's frightened, and she's drinking too much, and sometimes she's in physical pain.
Not often, he said, seeing the alarmed look on Arnie's face.
And she's been to the doctor, and the change is all it is, but she's in an emotional uproar. You're her only child, and the way she is now, all she can see is